everyone. Thanks so much for joining me on the Slice of Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. Joining me today is Carolyn Starrett, the CEO at Flatiron Health. How are you?
Hi, Jared. It's great to be here.
I'm excited to have you. Let's dive right in. Tell the audience about yourself.
So hi, everyone. Carolyn Starrett. I lead a company called Flatiron Health. We have been around, we were founded in 2012, so we've been around for just over 10 years. And our mission is to learn from the experience of every person with cancer. We do that using machine learning and real-world data to really kind of expand the possibilities for how cancer patients are treated in real-world settings, to inform kind of research questions, to inform decision-making as new therapies are developed, and to help ensure that new medicines are available for the right patient populations at the right time as quickly and efficiently as possible. I have been at Flatiron for about 7.5 years now. I spent most of my career before Flatiron working in data and technology. And then my story at Flatiron is maybe somewhat unique in that I joined the company when we were a private company just around our Series B fundraising. We were acquired a little over 5 years ago. We had a kind of post-acquisition phase. We're now an independent subsidiary of the Roche Group, one of the leading pharmaceutical companies. And then I stepped into the CEO role when our two co-founders transitioned on 2.5 years ago now. And so we're now in this really kind of interesting phase of thinking about what our kind of long-term future is when we grow up.
I would like to, based on something you said in there, I'd like to talk a little bit about this independent subsidiary, because you see a lot of companies that have had success with that, like Amazon and Zappos, right? Like, it really allowed the companies to continue to flourish. Can you talk about maybe why you maybe like this type of structure, and why maybe more acquisitions, and oh my God, I just said maybe so many times, why other organizations might want to take a similar approach when it comes to acquisitions rather than kind of just absorbing and keeping it all as one entity?
Yeah, I actually am seeing more and more examples of this type of approach happen. We feel incredibly privileged. Roche as a corporate owner has a long-term strategic mindset for the power and possibilities that data and evidence generation can offer to drug development and to the path to market for new medicines. And so they were very much interested in Flatiron as kind of a strategic pillar of their long-term research and development strategy. At the same time, Flatiron's core customers are kind of all of the large pharmaceutical companies. And then we also have half of our business that works at the point of care with cancer centers, building technology to inform the treatment experience with clinicians. And so for a whole set of structural reasons, we effectively have, very well described firewalls, and we kind of must operate autonomously because, our job is to serve all of those stakeholders across the ecosystem. And we can't do that, from, our work with Roche looks similar to any to our work with any other client. So the benefit of that, I think, has been, an opportunity to partner on new pilots and new initiatives and accelerate innovation with Roche, while also having the flexibility and the autonomy to really invest in a long-term strategy that makes sense for Flatiron into the culture and the talent and the expertise that is really quite different in our little world than might exist anywhere else in a large global pharmaceutical and diagnostics company. I think it's really enabled us to benefit from the ability to think long-term in terms of the impact and possibilities we can contemplate, while also having kind of the scrappiness and the culture and the focus on what we really need to do to execute and deliver.
So thank you so much for sharing about the how operating as an independent subsidiary has like helped the company and continue to still have that scrappiness as a startup. Now I want to talk a little bit about something that I know you're really excited about, and that's the company's international expansion. What does that look like? What was part of the decision making in terms of this is something that you wanted to do?
Yeah, so I mentioned at the very beginning, our mission has been to learn from the experience of every person with cancer. And cancer is a disease that unfortunately impacts people across the globe. And so we've always had the desire and ambition to think about how we can learn from patient populations outside the U.S., even though we were founded here in the U.S. So we started this journey internationally probably about 5 years ago, and have invested quite a bit in building up a presence in the UK, in Germany, and in Japan, three like really important markets in terms of patient populations, research, and learning about cancer. And this past June, I think we announced our one of our largest partnerships with the NHS Trust, Leeds Teaching Hospital in the UK. We have several other that are soon to follow. And this is a first of its kind partnership that's really bringing together clinicians, epidemiologists, software engineers, data scientists to carefully curate all of the patient experiences throughout the UK hospital system, and help turn that into data and evidence that we can actually learn from, while really, really being careful and thoughtful about how we think about the right privacy, security, and patient considerations there. And what I think this is going to be able to do, alongside of similar work that's happening in Germany and in Japan, is help ensure that we can learn faster and we can understand, you know, where regional differences may play a role in different treatment patterns and different outcomes. And importantly, in Europe, we're spending a lot of our time thinking about how we can work with regulators in Europe to think about making which drugs should be reimbursable, and how do we provide access to patients around the world to really important and novel medicines, and build the right evidence package to make a determination on how to make those available and do that much more quickly.
That's super exciting for you and your team, by the way. And I'm sure this has been something that that's been on the roadmap for a while that you wanted to address and you wanted to go into and expand. I have a question that I don't always hear an answer to, and that's when expanding internationally, what, I guess, beyond just the regulatory challenges and the education that you have to go through, what's it like building an international team? Like, I know that's, you know, something that's on your focus, different cultures, different areas. What does that look like? I know our audience would be very curious to hear that.
Maybe to use an overused expression, I would say it's not for the faint of heart. The amount of work and energy that has gone into thinking about, you know, how to take everything we've learned in the U.S., but be really thoughtful and intentional about how to deploy those learnings in what are inherently very different healthcare markets with kind of, you know, different care delivery systems, different regulatory provisions, different security considerations. We, you know, had to really carefully tune how we shape and build our data sets, for example, launching kind of patient engagement boards throughout Europe to understand the patient perspective, working carefully with the regulators in each market to understand the right considerations. And then as a result, as you can imagine, it requires kind of local on the ground context and understanding. So we've actually built teams that we're scaling up now in each of the countries in which we operate so that we can, you know, bring in clinicians who understand the dynamics, bring in abstractors helping to curate the data who are kind of on the ground working in those languages. And so with kind of each one of these steps, we've tried to be really intentional and in thinking about what work needs to happen here in headquarters in New York, predominantly in the U.S., and where do we need to have local on the ground expertise to help us translate the best way to approach both building and scaling the work that we do with hospitals and health systems internationally.
I want to make sure to thank you so much too. Yeah. I'm always so curious about there's a bunch of other things to ask questions about, but the team building and how you're continuing to scale, those questions are more for me too. I always love hearing from the leaders that we have on the show. I do want to talk a little bit about your, also on the topic of expansion, your expansion into RWE services. What does that look like? Where are things at there?
I think about it a little bit more broadly than just services. I think a really important learning that we've had is, well, maybe said another way, we have spent a decade figuring out how to do the best job that we can parsing, curating, and harmonizing real world data. We have a deep expertise in learning how to extract data that may live siloed and in very hard to reach places across the health ecosystem, figuring out how to use machine learning to parse that, understanding various different quality considerations, understanding how to map the data that we can access together with really important outside data points, or to, you know, apply the right level of interpretation to do things like, you know, stitch together endpoints that one might want to study. So what is the actual progression of disease? How does one think about overall survival in the context of real world data sets that don't have that very neatly and clearly defined? So we spent all this time kind of building this expertise, but in the first decade of our existence, we weren't thinking about the application of the data. We were thinking about how to curate the best data that we could. And what we've kind of done is taken a step back and realized that so much of the power and potential that we see ahead is in the generation of insights on top of the data sets that we can create. And it's in the application of the technology and the platforms that we've built to actually transform how evidence is generated and how the learning takes place. And so that's really playing out for us in two different ways. One is, you know, we're not just offering to our customers, here's a data set, you go figure out how to use it. We're sitting down at the table with our partners and saying, okay, what's the right way to design a trial for this new medicine? How can we think about the right inclusion, exclusion criteria, use our data to understand the best way to design the trial to enroll it most quickly with a really, truly representative and diverse patient population? And then where, you know, what sites should we open the trial at? And so we're having a kind of very different set of conversations that isn't just about the data, but that's actually about solving real needs and kind of thinking end to end about what the solution to those problems might look like. Data being a piece of it, analytics, advisory being another piece of it. The other side I'm really excited about is starting to think not only about how we can parse through the evidence that already exists from routine clinical care, but how do we figure out where the gaps in evidence may lie? So how can we start to think about how to prospectively generate and fill those evidence gaps? And we've built a whole, you know, set of technology that can help us to do that like much more efficiently than is currently happening when you think about how a typical clinical trial is run. So for example, we've recently announced a partnership with Sanofi, where we are kind of scaling across the entirety of their early stage oncology trial portfolio, a technology that enables us to automate the data management required in those studies. What we hear from sites over and over again that we work with is that running a clinical trial is incredibly burdensome, very inefficient. 70% of the data points that you have to collect to run a clinical trial have to be manually, duplicatively re-entered from the EHR into the clinical trial data management system. And that's just absurd in our view. And so, you know, we've sat down to say, how do we use all of our expertise in data and automation and technology to just like reduce that burden entirely so that sites can run more trials, we can enroll patients more quickly, and we can kind of minimize the overall cost and effort required to generate these new insights.
That's super exciting. Congratulations to you and the team. Whenever you can partner with Sanofi too, that's obviously a huge accomplishment, and I'm sure the feeling is mutual for them. I would love to, as we wrap up here, would love to have any advice you have for also kind of new entrepreneurs in the field, new leaders in the field. You've learned a lot. Would love to hear that. And then what's next for the company that really excites you? Those two things.
Key learnings, let's see, especially in this economic climate, I think there's just no substitute for focus and grit. It's especially in healthcare, the type of change, the opportunities we see are going to take fundamentally, you know, big evolution and transformation of how drugs are developed, how trials are run, how data are used in each of those processes. And that is not for That will require kind of an ongoing, persistent commitment and dedication to the cause. And there are also really, really big problems that, you know, could be tackled in a number of different ways. And so I think the biggest thing we continue to remind ourselves at Flatiron is to stay laser focused on our mission and the places in which we think we can have maximum impact on that challenge, and then to bring people together and you know, work together as opposed to work separately. And I think especially in other regulated industries where, you know, there's a big mandate for change. You see this playing out across the AI field right now with the, you know, recent excitement around generative AI. These technologies that are truly transformative require actually working in new and different ways. And so, you know, keeping that long-term end game in mind, I think, is really, really important. Maybe that's actually a good tee up to what I'm most excited about moving forward, is I think there has been so much foundational investment and capability building that has happened over the last decade. And I think we're finally at the point of a true inflection where we now get to shift gears, and it's about really taking advantage of the capabilities, the data, the technology that exist, and seeing the real impact that they can have. And I think we are fundamentally on the precipice of breakthroughs in how clinical trials are run, of using data for good in ways that can drive, you know, foundationally better impact and outcomes for patients, and in, you know, powering a fundamentally stronger and better patient experience at the point of care using those insights. And there's been a lot of work grit to get to this point. I think now is the time in which we really get to see that pay off.
Well, Carolyn, I'm really excited to continue to follow Flatiron's progress. I mean, it's been incredible what you've done already, and I can't wait to watch the next several years unfold to see what you continue to do. And again, congrats on the Sanofi partnership and all that you've accomplished. Excited to hopefully continue the conversation in the future and get an update on where things are at. But thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the time and the opportunity to come chat.